my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger. Woo!
Many men have tried to make a name for themselves in their first ever WWE matches, and they've all fallen flat on their faces. But no one superstar stands a chance against two at the same time, especially us two. Who here likes math? Who here likes mine? Well, we're going to combine them both for one easy-to-understand equation. Two is greater than one. Two is greater than one.
What the?
Two might be right. Is greater than one. Two
Shut
is
up.
Greater than one. One, two is greater than one.
Thank you. These guys could star in a new TV show, Booker. 1.5
Their opponent, from Sioux City, weighing in at 291 pounds.
Everyone, welcome to episode 246 of my 1-2-3 cents, the podcast, and the first, the pilot episode, if you will, of Two is Greater Than One. This is going to be a monthly segment here on the show. Each month, there will be a guest co-host for various segments, but Two is Greater Than One will have a permanent co-host in Heath Hatton, who is from Stride Pro Wrestling. I first met Heath, though, back, probably 2010. He was a guest on News 3 this morning and came in and coined the phrase Kevin Cheeseburger, and we've been friends ever since. So, Heath, welcome back. A pretty consistent guest here on my 1-2-3 cents. Welcome back as a co-host.
Well, thank you for having me back and allowing me to ramble on alongside you.
Yeah, and we're gonna tackle several different issues or conversations in the world of professional wrestling, indie wrestling. I wanted to do this segment with you, though, and kind of kick it off for the 1st of August to talk about several different things. And one thing that kind of came up late last week was the passing of the legendary Harley Race. And I only knew him from a fan's perspective, obviously watching him on Wrestling at the Chase as a kid, and then when he moved to the WWF and seeing him in a couple of live matches, and then actually running into him at the airport in, I think it was Miami for WrestleMania 28, and getting a quick photo op. But other than that, I didn't know him. But you actually, because you have trained and you are obviously a professional wrestler, you've met Harley Race before because he's got close ties to the Missouri, St. Louis area.
Yeah, I met Harley back, I think originally it was 2010, maybe 2011. Anyway, Brandon Espinosa got me booked at WLW, and they were doing some shows on the Illinois side, and they'd done a couple in Missouri, and I had my Missouri license back then. And anyway, they I met Harley through Brandon Espinosa, and I think I told the story last time I was on you about how I met Hargis, and he was in the ring. That was actually for Harley. So I met Brandon Espinosa, or I met Chris Hargis through working for Harley. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, I met him, you know, back then and worked for his company. And that's where I met, like, Stacey O'Brien and a bunch of, you know, a bunch of people that had worked through Harley. And that's kind of how I got hooked up with SICW way back, was a lot of those guys worked for, you know, Harley. And that's how I got in contact with him.
How was Harley? Was he hands-on? Because I know he's had many health issues over the last decade or so, but how was he back in that time when you first met?
He was very hands-on. I worked with Leland, you know, Race, mm-hmm. and that's who'd done a lot of stuff. But Harley, I can remember the first time I met him, and actually Farmer Billy Hills was working as well, and he was working at Tony Atlas. But
oh, wow.
Anyway, I had asked the ring announcer, I said, does Harley ever watch any of the matches? And he told me, he said, Harley watches all the matches. I said, okay. And so I'd worked a guy named Dave Vaughn, and I was a heel, and I wasn't a very experienced heel at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just walked over to Harley and I said, thanks for having me. And he said, you have a great look. And he said, I'd like to see you, or so I can't remember how he worded it, but something about add more weight, because I was pretty scrawny back then.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me, he said, you're not comfortable being a heel. I can tell, or something to that effect. And I said, yeah. And he said, we'll work you as baby. And that was it. And actually, the next couple times I worked for him, I just shook his hand and said hi. That was the only interaction I had. The next night, I worked babyface, and it was against Chris Argus. And Leland Race and Brendan Espinosa had an amazing match, a 2 out of 3 falls that night. It's weird that I remember that. But I used to always stick around and watch the main event back then. I would always sit and watch it. But anyway, I remember they had a really amazing match. But Harley, that was the only interaction I had. But he was always nice. Anytime I worked for him and came in, he was always nice. Back then I was kind of shy and timid, and I didn't know what your place was, or if you were allowed to talk to these people, if you were allowed to say stuff. So I always just shook their hand and introduced myself, and then, you know, but he was always nice and cordial, but I always kind of just kept to myself.
Well, talk about, and as we've mentioned, you've been on the show before, and we've talked somewhat about this, but you obviously make a transition, not only physically with your appearance, but obviously, you know, this was 9 years ago, and now you are a big part of the Southern Illinois wrestling scene with Stride Pro Wrestling. Obviously, you took some of this advice to heart, and you've obviously picked up advice along the way, but how do you go from being that, in your words, kind of a scrawnier build on a show for Harley Race to probably not even 2 years later, you're wrestling on a WWE pay-per-view against Ryback? How does that transition happen, or how did it happen for you and so quickly?
I mean, I've just always been, like, people can say whatever they want about me, but when I'm at a wrestling show, I joke around, and you see this stuff with my kid on Facebook, but
mm-hmm.
who I am on Facebook is not really who I am. I'm not really that flamboyant of a guy, like, you know, you call me humble, he's had, you know, I mean, I'm a really kind of a quiet guy, and people that see me and hang out with me and do stuff, I'm not that person. But with that being said, I've always been the most dedicated person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm that way with my kid, and I'm like, you know, you don't play softball to play. You play softball to win and be the best. And maybe that's the wrong attitude to have. But when I started wrestling, and I knew, you know, to me, I didn't want to drive 200 miles to get paid $30. I never understood that. And
mm-hmm.
so to get paid and to do bigger things, it was, you know, like I had went and everywhere I went, everybody I talked about how you treat people and how you act professional and your attitude. And so that was the first thing I did. And it was actually Brandon Espinosa who was like, you dress up. You dress like you're applying for a job. So anywhere I went, you know, I had on I was dressed up. And anybody who knows me knows I wear sweatpants 90% of the time.
Right, yeah.
And so I dressed up, and I would wear, you know, a suit and tie sometimes, and that had came from him, and that's how I went. And anyway, I was over the top, and I talked, and I was friendly, and I was going to do whatever the promoter or booker told me to do. And that was, like, the first steps that I made, was, like, I wanted them to like me. And I do think I'm a funny guy, so I'm probably a likable guy, I would like to hope. So I would try to talk and be friendly and talk to the people that I was working with and booking. So that was the first thing, was being professional, being, and then once that happened, at the end of the day, you have to look a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably been the one thing that's probably bothered me the most, I guess, that makes me mad, because I've taken time. If you ask people that know me, Brandon Espinosa, Chris Hargis, Axe Allworth, Jay Spade, that knew me on a training level, I wanted to be a really good wrestler because
mm-hmm.
I enjoyed wrestling. And I will say that my style is a John Cena style or a 1980s, 1990s style, which is selling and working the crowd. And that's not for everybody, and I understand that. But that's how I train, and that's how I want it to be. And so I work my butt off, but people most of the time have always said, and I, you know, that I got the bookings and I got the places that I got to go because of my look. And I realized that your look is, oh my God, to get a look or to get an opportunity, your body is 90% of it. You have to look like you can beat somebody up.
Now, are you talking WWE and Impact, you know, like the bigger promotions, or in general?
I'm talking anywhere.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's just you, and most people will tell you, you know, there are guys that can go out and just work and get paid, and they're just phenomenal workers,
mm-hmm.
You know, just phenomenal. But for somebody who, you know, like for bigger companies and bigger money, it's you know, it is. It's the way you look, and it's not a, you know. I think that tide is changing. I think it changed with CM Punk.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, whenever I was coming up, that's just the way it was.
Yeah.
It was, if you wanted, and people, you know, companies, guys didn't like me because they felt like they were better. And a lot of times they were better wrestlers than I was. But I had a quote-unquote better look, so I got opportunities they didn't get. And it was a tough road, but I met the right people, and I was nice to the right people. I wasn't bitter. If somebody told me to go out and lose in 4 minutes to whoever, I went out and lost in 4 minutes. I didn't question it. I didn't argue. I went and did it. I took my pay, and I went home. And so I guess I just combined those three things. I trained harder than anybody else. I was always professional. You know, Adam Pearce, who I kind of look up to, has always said that, treat people fairly. Work hard, and you know, you get respect, and that's what I did. And everywhere I went dressed like I was applying for a job, and I learned to go on 3 or 4 hours of sleep. I trained my butt off, and it, you know, I didn't really take no for an answer.
Now, obviously, you know, the whole premise of this portion of the podcast is, you know, that phrase two is greater than one, and that comes from the handicap match. This was back in 2012 when Ryback was kind of first on the scene as Ryback and was tearing through enhancement talent as handicap matches. And you and Ace Hawkins, who we know from Stride Pro Wrestling and AAPW and, you know, the Midwest, he's all over Missouri, Southeast Missouri, with Cape Championship Wrestling as well. You two guys land a spot on the pay-per-view. How was that in terms of being, you know, you're backstage, and I know we've talked about this before. You are, as you mentioned, you know, you're dressed, you know, very nicely. You're professional. You're there to not, you know, be a quote unquote mark and, you know, take selfies with Triple H and, you know, John Cena and whomever else you run into backstage. So obviously you have to leave a good impression. And I know through the process you did that. but what was it like? Were you, did you have to do anything? Like, how did you control? This is coming out the wrong way, but, you know, obviously you're not going to run in there and act a fool, but did you have to remind yourself to stay professional, or did it, you know, were there other people there that were kind of like, you know, don't be an ass in front of these guys, for lack of a better phrase?
Well, luckily I had been there before, and so the pay-per-view that I was on wasn't my first time being with WWE or doing stuff for them, so that helped. And but it was actually guys that had been there that had told me, you know, luckily, like, you know, Shane Ridge had been there before, and he had kind of told me what to expect and how it was. And and then I was friends with, you know, Matt Cross, and he kind of, you know, I remember he told me it's the weirdest thing in the world, and every time you go, it doesn't get any better. It's always weird because you see these guys, and you see, like, you know, I was, like you said, I was a Triple H fan growing up. He was my favorite. And so you see him, but it's so weird because you're no longer a fan of them. You are not equal to them. You're wanting to be there, you know, in my mind, and I legit, and people probably will laugh when they listen to this, but in my mind, I see those guys on TV, and I think at one point I was just as good. Like I could do the things that they could do. And I, you know, but so it's hard when you're there with them. They're no longer superstars or guys that you see on TV. So I talked to the ones who wanted to talk to me, and I, you know, anytime I've been there, that's what I've done. I don't want to bother anybody, and I get it. Like, I'm a no one. You got to realize you're a nobody. You're a nothing. And that's number one. And number two, like, you're trying to get in there and take their job. Right. I think it was Seth Rollins who recently said Dean Ambrose is trying to take money off my table, or, you know, food off my table. You know, it's, you know, it's kind of the way it is, and that's why the wrestling business is. A lot of people don't realize. I get real mad when I watch people write blogs and crap on things that happen, and you don't understand. Like, it's cutthroat. I mean, it's, if you don't stay at the top, then you could lose that. Only one fall from the top there, you've seen it. Guys are gone. They get released, and it's cutthroat. And so that's kind of, like, you can feel the tension, I guess, or you could. This, like I said, this years ago when I was there. But when I was there, that's what I tried to do. But I decided, like, I was going to, anytime I was there, I was going to get in and let anybody do anything when they wanted to.
Sure.
And so that's kind of how it, you know, I think I've told you before, I wasn't supposed to originally get to do the Ryback thing because I had tattoos.
Yeah.
But I got in there, and Ace was getting to do it, and I just started talking to Ryback, and I just struck up a conversation with him. And he said, with your boots on, you're my height, so they probably won't let you do it. And I said, well, what if I start outside the ring? Because originally they had wanted us both to start in the ring. And I said, and you bring me in the hard way. And he's like, I like it. And then he went over to Arn Anderson and some other guys, and then they came over. They told me to take off my shirt, and they took pictures of me. I don't know what they did with it. And then they said, okay, it's fine, you can do it. And then it was like, I'll never forget. I slid in the ring, and Ryback gave me a high five.
Now, did you know that they weren't going to use you, and you were, yes. Were you trying to sell yourself to Ryback at that point?
It was, there was me and a guy named Marche Rocket.
Yeah.
And they thought Marche was too big, too tall. And, they thought that because of my tattoos and the way I looked, and the guy that was supposed to do it no-showed.
Oh, wow.
So they had another guy who knows Joe, and they had called somebody else to come in, and he was on his way. And so I was, you know, trying to get on. And there was guys there that, you know, told me not to do it. But it was like, oh, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. But I was like, I want to do it. Like, I don't care. Like, I've never cared to job out or lose. No, I wasn't. Originally, I wasn't. But I had luckily... it was actually, it was Sheamus who got me in the ring, and wanted to try something that he wanted Daniel Bryan to take in their match, and Daniel Bryan wanted to see it. That got me in the ring.
Oh, wow.
And then I started talking to Ryback, and then Ryback liked me, and then I not to like toot my own horn or anything, but I had said, like, what if you brought me in the hard way? Like, I walked away like I was scared.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I love it. And then he walked away. And not to say that they, you know, not toot my own horn saying that was my idea, but that, like, I just was presenting stuff and ideas because Ryback was being nice to me to get me in there.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be able to do it. Because in my mind, I was like, no matter what, if I never get to come back here again, I'll always have a DVD that I'll be on. And now, hell, I'm on the network.
So right.
It's like, I'm forever going to be engraved in that.
So let me ask you this, and I'm going to word this in a way where I'm going to try to not offend anyone. You know, obviously on a lot of these indie shows, you stand out because, as we've mentioned, you work out, you look like a wrestler. You have that physique. When you're at a show like this with WWE, are you competing with a lot of the guys that look similar builds to you, or do you feel like you were kind of standing out there as well, or what was it? Do you think that, because obviously you are, Ace is a great wrestler, but you know, you are taller than Ace and you have more mass and whatnot. So you obviously contrasted in that regard, but were there more guys there that look like you or that look like Ace, do you think?
When I did my private tryout, that's when it was like you realized how big the talent pool was.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and you know, in my class was Mike Bennett, was Adam Cole.
Oh, wow.
Was, you know, Del Sol, who was like Kalisto. And Bull Dempsey was in there. There was a couple other guys who got signed from the class. So there was, Mark J. Rocket was there. So there was 30, I mean, there was bodybuilders, there was former NFL players. So at that point, no, I didn't stand out. I'd probably stand out in a negative way.
Mm.
So, you know, the first time I had to try out, you know, I got sick and I actually had influenza and I lost 28 pounds.
Wow.
And it was a fight to get me cleared to go.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got there, actually my blood pressure was low and I had to explain what happened. And it was actually, I passed out. It was the second day. It was a 3-day camp the first time, and it was the end of the second day. And I don't remember it. We had just done a awful workout, just an awful, awful in-ring workout. And I got out of the ring, and I went to get water, and somebody else got one. And I just felt real dizzy and lightheaded. And next thing I know, I woke up in the training room, and they were like real concerned because they couldn't get me to wake up.
Oh wow.
So but anyway, I was, you know, I was dehydrated and I had to leave and I had to go and they pumped some IVs in me and then but they realized I didn't really tell them, like, they knew I was sick, they knew I wasn't cleared, and then I still went. And anyway, it was Jim Ross when I came back the third day, and he came up to me and he said, they told us that over the course of the last 2 weeks, you've lost a total of 34 pounds and you've lost 6 pounds since we started this in 2 days. And he was just like, you got to, wrestling wise or whatever, if it doesn't work out, you have like a ginormous set of balls. And then it was Bill DeMott that like pulled me aside, and then when I left, he followed me on Twitter. He's the one that, you know, invited me back. He's the one that always took care of me. So after that, because he would always tell me that he thought I had so much talent. So but yeah, when you're there and you're with the best, then you realize that the talent pool's so big and everybody has a good body, everybody has a good look, and it's, and you know, it's your what you think you offer may be different than what they're looking for, or what they think you offer.
Yeah, let's fast forward to today. You know, you have been very public about it on social media. You are a recent college graduate. You have a family, and do you ever see the WWE or going to that quote unquote next level in your cards? I mean, I know, you know, you are focused on you know, Southern Illinois and working here and taking care of your daughter and your family and as well as what you're doing with Stride Pro Wrestling. But if WWE were to call and say, hey, we're running a pay-per-view in St. Louis and we'd like you to be a part of that, or we're going to do Raw, is any of that a possibility still to you, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, there are times when I'm like, oh, that'd be cool to go in and see Jay Hatton be on 205 Live or something, you know, something like that, or to see me try to wrestle Braun Strowman. But it would really, like, so if they called me and said, hey, we want you to come to Chicago and do, you know, Monday, you know, Night Raw, and then Tuesday go to Rockford, do SmackDown. If my kid had a softball game on Monday or Tuesday, I probably wouldn't go.
Yeah.
But if she didn't, like, that'd be the only thing that would keep me. And she plays a lot of softball, so that's right. A possibility.
Yeah, yeah.
but, you know, as far as, like, doing it, yeah, like, I mean, my dream job would be, like I've told you this before, would be to write.
Yeah.
With them, or to write. But the only thing that bothers me is I wouldn't be good at writing a script for somebody. I wouldn't be good at being like, this is your script, this is what you're going to do, this is what you're going to say, because I don't think that way. So I would want to write storylines and angles and build matches. Like, that's what I would, and I don't know now, or you don't even know how WWE operates. Nobody really seems to understand or know. So
right,
that wouldn't be something that I'd be interested in, writing a script for the Miz to read. Now,
right.
Like, writing a story for the, you know, Miz versus Kevin Huntsberger, like, that would be something that I would be interested in. Okay, and then I'd let them go tell the story. I'd let them go tell the, you know, I'd give them the direction, and then, you know, and I don't think that that is the way they operate. So, you know, that as far as, like, an in-ring performer, I doubt that it, like, the days of me wanting to wrestle four or five times a week are probably behind me.
Yeah. So. Well, and that storytelling, though, is so important, and that is obviously a big part of what you're doing now as well. You know, you obviously, I think, are very proficient at it. And like you said, you don't necessarily write a quote unquote script that someone goes out there and spews out in front of the crowd. But that storytelling element of even indie wrestling, and even though Stride Pro Wrestling isn't on TV, we have a lot of the same fans that come back month after month, and in some cases of the month of August, week after week, as we're going to be in Benton on the 10th this Saturday, and then in Pulaski County for the fair down there on August 16th, and then the big show at Rent One Park on August 29th. So how do you arrive at the ideas? I mean, I know a lot of the veterans in the Stride locker room are training the young men and women that are becoming a big part of the show as well now. That's obviously a very important part of the show as well, is to bring in that fresh talent that's kind of homegrown and kind of learning the ropes, pun intended, through someone who has been through so much with so many different companies.
Yeah, so I mean, what was your question?
I guess there's really not a question to it. It's just the, you know, why is the storytelling? Because I think sometimes people get out there and they want to show.
What you're saying now.
Yeah, they want to show off their wrestling skills, but that storytelling is such an integral part of the presentation as well.
Well, it's like I was saying. It's real funny. Like you talk to somebody like this just happened this week. Like, I had a veteran who had messaged me and said, hey, you're not having us wrestle one-on-one, right? And I said, no, we'll stretch it out. And then the younger Green kid messaged and was like, hey, we're going one-on-one, right? So it's the complete op, you know, it's understanding how to tell a good story is something that, I mean, you meet so many guys that don't know and don't understand. And I think it's just either you have it or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Some guys just, they can't, you know, I've dealt with bookers that could not think outside of themselves. They put themselves first, they book themselves, and they struggle to give other people good stuff to do and fun stuff to do. And I'm not that way. But I think as a fan's perspective, I do think that is, you look at wrestling for the longest time and it's the feud and it's the stories. Even like people say, oh, it's 1980, but it's still the story. It's still Hogan and Andre was a story, mm-hmm. and it was a build. But for me, that's what I enjoy. I don't want to go somewhere and just wrestle somebody just to wrestle them. It's not fun to me, like, because it's, you don't have that emotion and the crowd's not in it as much. I mean, you know, last night, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it at the end, but mm-hmm. even with you, you know, like I said ahead of time, hopefully this happens.
Right.
And it happens.
Yeah.
So it's, but you're banking on it by our fans and them knowing and them following and them following our storylines. And what's funny though is, if you're on the page, people message and they ask, what happened? Who won this match?
Yeah.
You know, if they miss a show, they want, because they know that it's going to be a progression of the story. And I think after a while, I mean, we've seen it. We won't go down the road. We've seen it with AAPW and mm-hmm. Pro Wrestling Collision. It was, the stories didn't always flow the way they should. And they didn't always, you know, make sense back to back. And then, you know, our fan base fell, and you see it all the time. If they're not, and that's been the tricky part, and not to ever toot my own horn, because you know I am humbly that. But I, like, that's been the one thing that I think I've been good at, and that I learned from Larry Matisick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, anytime I talk to him, he would always tell me, well, like, Heath, you got to remember, like, we have to keep this story going. And even though this feud ends, we got to move on to a new one. And he would always say, like, you know, you got to think where you're going next, where you're going next. And I think that's what's made us successful and kept our fans, that while one's ending and dying down, we have something else happening and moving forward. And I think that's what I've really done really well is, you know, like, it was a Cash and Spade. We built this story with Cash and Spade, and we built Spade as this huge underdog, and then he loses to Cash. And you're like, well, where does he go from there? Well, then we have the story where he was under a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's already catapulted somewhere else. Tony was in the main event going for the title for almost 2 years. He finally loses an Iron Man. Heath Hatton finally beats him. Then where does he go? Well, he teams with Spade, and they've done this. So then they moved that way. And then the only one who was really left was me.
Mm-hmm.
I was the only one who didn't really have a game plan for myself. I had Red Daniels. I had Hargis. I had all these people. And the only one that I didn't have was me. You know, and I'm like, oh, I'll just go lose to Red for a few months.
But, mm-hmm.
you know, so I think that's what's made us good, is that these people are always going somewhere. They always have somewhere to go.
That's the formula, though, in general. I know that you've wrestled in other locker rooms around here and across the world, as we talked about before, but that just seems like it should be kind of the norm, but it's really not. And how much of our crowd specifically do you make your decisions? You know, do you base decisions on how you know? Because after almost 3.5 years, you pretty much know our fan base and how they're going to react and respond to things. Do you put their, you know, how you think they're going to react? Because as you mentioned, you know, Saturday night when we did the spot at the very beginning of the show, and you said, you know, hopefully they will chant your name when we make this announcement that Scott Phoenix is injured and can't wrestle. And sure enough, they did. And, you know, I had a feeling that was going to happen, but when it happened, I was like, you know, he knows this crowd. So how important is that, or how much of an influence is that crowd for you when you are making these kinds of decisions and coming up with these stories?
Well, that's it. Like, whenever, that's the easiest thing for me, booking with a crowd. So Farmer Billy Hills comes up to me afterwards, and he asked me for advice. Mm-hmm. And I gave him advice on what I would do. And I told him, I always wrestle for the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I don't wrestle for anybody else. I don't wrestle for myself. I don't wrestle for the guys in the back. I don't try to pop a worker. I try to pop that crowd. I try to engage that crowd. And I try to suck them in and then get them invested in my match every single time. When I book, it's the same way, but I book it in a way that I'm a wrestling fan.
Mm-hmm.
I love wrestling, and I love, I love watching as a fan, and I love being surprised, and I love, like, there's been three times in my, I don't want to toot my own horn, but when we do those Hunter Woodworth does those surveys, it's always Heath Hatton that finishes number one. But yeah, I don't want to, but anyway, just want to throw that out there. But I try to watch as a fan, and there's been three times where I've completely been surprised, and I got up off my seat and screamed. And one was Stone Cold and The Rock at Backlash. 1999, I think, or 98, mm-hmm. But it was over the Smoking Skull belt when it was stolen, and I think it might even be when it was stolen over the bridge. But when Stone Cold won, I popped and I got up off my seat and I screamed. Another one was when Triple H tapped out to Chris Benoit.
Oh yeah,
I didn't see that coming. And the other one was when The Rock returned. And so I, as a fan, I want those moments.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember those moments, how, like, amazing those moments were to me. And so when I book, I don't book as our fans. I book as myself as a fan.
Okay.
And so I book, and I like storylines, and I think I'm your typical fan. I think some of the problem with indie wrestling is the booker looks and thinks, okay, Tony Flood versus Cash would be an amazing match.
Right.
I'm going to book it.
Yeah.
And then, but within the scheme of the story, you're like, well, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
You know, they're going this way, they're both heels, but they just book it because they're like, now they'll have an amazing match. Well, they don't realize that you can book, I could book today, if I was to go, I know I could book Jay Spade versus Tony Flood, and it'd be an amazing match. I could book Heath Hatton and Axe. It's going to be an amazing match. I know all these guys have great chemistry. I could book, Red versus Ryder. They're going to have a good match. But the crowds may not care.
Right.
Because if you book a match or book a show with eight great matches, like by about the fourth match, they're going to be done.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see something else. They want to be entertained. They want to see whatever it is, a segment with Sam, a segment with Scott Phoenix, or they want to see the DR party cutting a promo. That they want to see, they want to be entertained in different ways.
Yeah.
And I think, so that's what I tried to book. I tried to book in different ways. And then when I do it, it's always like with our crowd, I'm like, I always try to give them two or three undercard matches. Mm-hmm. And then I tried to give them, so like, this feud is ending, but look at this one, it's beginning.
Yeah. Well, you brought it up earlier, and this is the portion where it's Humble Kevin Huntsberger with Humble Heath Hatton. You had presented the idea to me a while back about doing the tag team stuff with Tony and Jay, and I Saturday night was an amazing memory for me. It was by far, I've had two matches, but I don't know. I think because it was a surprise, even though we hoped that the fans and you knew that the fans were going to chant at the beginning of the show for me to be your partner. But when I pulled the referee out of the ring and just the way the crowd reacted to that, and then when I took my jacket off, I knew we had him. And I can't articulate it well enough, but it was an amazing experience, and it was exactly, you know, I got goosebumps from it because I knew that those fans were buying into the story that we were telling, and the story continues at the end of the month on August 29th. But I've got to ask, because how you know, I'm just a middle-aged or past middle-aged former now news anchor, ring announcer for Stride, but why bring me into this? Why, you know, and how are the other guys? And I guess it comes down to ego as part of it too, because like you said, you would go in there and lose to whoever or whatever you're told to do, you would do. But I just expected a lot of pushback from every, you know, Mike Masters when I wrestled him, Roger when I wrestled him, and Tony and Jay are, you know, I just can't get over how incredibly cooperative everyone is with someone like me getting into the ring with them.
Well, I mean, first of all, like, I didn't know you were quitting the news when I booked it. No, I mean, I think it's you. That's what I think is so special, one, about our locker room. I don't get pushback from anybody. Not a single solitary person gives me any pushback.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I have guys that have really just stupid ideas.
Yeah.
But you know, and I'll laugh about it, but I don't get any pushback from anybody. And everybody wants to do, and they, I think now they've trusted me that whatever I have them do, I'm going to take care of them, and mm-hmm. we're going to make it be good. And so when I did the Iron Man thing, like I said, I didn't know where I was going to go. But to me, it was like I didn't really get my comeback from Tony and Spade, and because I put them right into the tag team
mm-hmm.
thing.
Yeah.
And I kind of went and did it. You know, I really wanted to put Red over, and I really wanted to make Red the top baby face for a while.
Yeah.
And catapult him, and I knew to do that, he had to beat me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I wanted to do that. So I kind of put it on hold. Well, as it, you know, like it is, you're out there in front of them and you do so much for Stride, and you are a former TV, you know, child star. So, but the, you know, the fans know you, and so they know our relationship. And for 3 years, when I'm in the ring, they know I give you crap,
right?
And I make fun of you, and I say stuff to you, and so they like. I wanted to tell the story of that, you know. And I told it a bunch that I don't really have a whole lot of friends in the wrestling business, and people are jealous of me, which really isn't the case. But that's kind of the story that it's been, that I, you know, nobody likes me. You know,
yeah.
You're Spade and Foot, yelling at that. And so the story that I wanted to tell was that you being the guy with no balls, and that I called the P word a lot, you know, was going to step up and save me, and then you're undefeated, so whenever you finally do lose to me, when I turn heel on you, that's, so the fans listening, that's the future. But no, I mean, I like I said, I think I knew it was going to get a reaction because the fans do, you being humble, Kevin Huntsberger. They do love you, and they do, like, you're, you know, like, and Jerry says, when you think of Stride, you think of Kevin Huntsberger, and you think of, you know, you don't think of Heath Hatton, but you think of Kevin, and you think of Wayne, and you think of the people that really are like the core of Stride, or, you know, Sam, or people that aren't necessarily wrestlers,
mm-hmm.
that, and so they want to see you guys involved in stuff because, like I said, it's entertainment, and you know, you're not Kevin Huntsberger, the news guy. You're Kevin Hunsberger, like the stride guy at mm-hmm. our shows, and that's what you're to them. That's what you are. And you know, like my buddy Craig, his son Quentin, he didn't even know you were on the news.
Oh wow!
So you know, he doesn't know you,
right?
Yeah, and like he saw. And like he saw Jerry at a baseball game. He didn't know T Dog was a teacher, so he didn't like he didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like that's what like I think that's the key. And you're this announcer who, and I really think that them pushing you, little things like that, you forget.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I like, and I said it that night, pushing like just at the last minute,
right?
But they see that, and Kevin's getting bullied, and I bully you all the time. But you know, it's just they see it, and but the like everybody, every wrestler, you want to have, you just want to have a good match. That and a good match is based off of, any really great wrestler will tell you, is based off the crowd reaction. You know, like it's really just, you know, like Tony Flood was saying last night, he's like, I love working Heath at other people's shows because he has fun and he wants to hit every single WWE finisher. Because you go to these shows that don't have storylines and you just have guys that, quote unquote, excuse my language, I just want to get their shit in.
Sure.
And so they're hitting everything under the sun, and you're not going to get over with the crowd no matter what you do, because if you're later on the show, they've then seen everything. Well, you know what they haven't seen? They haven't seen every single WWE finisher hit. So I'm going to hit them all. And so, I mean, I'm going to leg drop them, I'm going to rock bottom them, I'm going to hit a stunner, I'm going to hit an F5. And that's just kind of my way of having fun
mm-hmm.
and make people mad. But what, you know, what I'm saying with that is you want that crowd reaction. So you want the crowd to be invested, and the louder the crowd, the better it is. Like you said, you got goosebumps, and you said it was probably one of your favorite moments because you got that crowd reaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that we wanted, and you got that feeling. And I mean, I really think that the booker at Stride did a great job of putting you in a position to be successful, and that he hadn't sold really well and put a great match together that really had the crowd engaged. And so, I mean, it all worked out, and Tony and Spade were all excited. I mean, Spade was talking about it all night last night, just
yeah.
how awesome it was. I mean, he had, when I was telling him, when I called him and told him what I wanted to do, he was like, oh my God, I got goosebumps. Just hearing it.
Yeah.
Because he knew how it was gonna go.
Yeah.
And he knew how, and when I told him what moves I wanted you to hit and how I wanted the finish to go, and he was like, oh my God, I got goosebumps. Like, so, like, because he knew, like, oh my God, that's going to be good. And like you said, when you took off that, your jacket, and, you know, I was like, I mean, that probably got a bigger pop than when you actually tagged in.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I had my back turned, but I heard him erupt, and I rolled over, and you had taken your jacket off.
So. Yeah. Well, it was definitely a fun night, and again, it is happening August 29th at Rent One Park in Marion, Illinois. I do know some folks are going to be coming in from out of town, Chad specifically flying in from L.A. just to see this show, so he's not seen me wrestle before, so I'm appreciative of that. I'm appreciative of the opportunity, and I'm glad to have Heath on the podcast as well. And actually, the next show, the next Two is Greater Than One, will drop the Monday on Labor Day after our big match, and it'll be after the next AEW show. So I'm sure we'll talk more about that and other things going on in the world of professional wrestling. Heath, is there anything else you want to say before we kind of wrap things up for this first installment?
Oh, not really. I mean, just we got some big shows coming. We have, I'll put it out there that we do have August 16th at Pulaski County coming up, and so make sure you're there. Red Daniels is taking on Cash Gordon title.
Oh, nice.
And then September 7th, we'll be back in Carterville. And then September 14th is we're going to be in Centralia for another youth build, show. So we have a lot of shows coming up, and I'm very excited about it. So I like the direction that the company is going. So, but just make sure you if you're listening and you're in the listening area, that you, you know, go check out these shows and support. And I think people just need to realize that, you know, Kevin Hunsberger gets all our money, so nobody else makes anything but you. So to come and support and pay us so we can all get paid. And how about Hunter Woodworth on your little podcast saying that I'm the most over wrestler at Stride?
That's true. That is true. At least for now. We'll have to wait and see after the 29th. But once again, thank you, Heath, for the opportunities and the fact that Stride Pro Wrestling is even a thing right now. And I thank all of you for listening. And as he said, come out August 10th, 16th, 29th, and then again September 7th and 14th. You can follow StrideProWrestling.com for all the very latest. And also, don't forget to check out and support all the shows here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network, including Positive Cynicism, the Nerds United Podcast, and the Five Heart Podcast. Thanks, everyone, so much for listening. Have a great week, and we'll talk again soon.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.